שוב שלום לכם מן הכנס ה-13 של המכון למחקרי ביטחון לאומי, ואנחנו כבר בעיצומם של הדיונים כאן באוניברסיטת תל אביב, וזה הזמן קצת לדבר על האזור שלנו, המזרח התיכון, קצת על סוריה, קצת על ISIS דאש, אם אתם עוד זוכים את הארגון הזה שכל כך טלטל את חיינו במשך כמה שנים. אז האורחת הבאה שלנו היא ג'ניפר קפרלה, היא מהמכון לחקר המלחמה בוושינגטון, ואנחנו מאוד שמחים לארח אותה כאן בעמדה שלנו. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Thank you for joining us here at the conference. So let's go to Syria first, right? You're an expert on Syria. Is the war over there?
Sure, certainly not, unfortunately. I think it's a painful reality for so many in this region that this war is far from a conclusion. And in fact, I think we may actually be headed to an even more dangerous and possibly lethal phase of the conflict.
Can we avoid wars in the 21st century?
Well, I think the problem is we're headed into a new century with a number of ongoing conflicts that are actually on a trajectory to escalate rather than to de-escalate. And I think there was a lot of hope, not in a positive sense, but there was sort of this resigned fatalism about the conflict in Syria after the Russians intervened, that perhaps this conflict was going to come to an uneasy, if not stable, close. And unfortunately, the reality is the Russians have not been able to help Assad stabilize the country. And in fact, a lot of the areas that they've retaken together are increasingly unstable. It's such a fragile military victory that there's no reality now in the foreseeable future, in my view, in which the refugees are able to return home. So we're going to continue to live with the consequences of just that one conflict alone for the foreseeable future. And as I mentioned, I think it may actually get worse before it gets better.
Okay, so let's try to understand why.
Sure.
Why is it going to get worse? I mean, the Russians are here. ISIS is mostly defeated. The Syrian dictator Assad is holding the power. Why is it going to get worse?
Sure. So there's a number of drivers of additional instability or unraveling in Syria moving forward. One is actually the limits of Russian influence. Mm-hmm. I think that the Russian role in Syria has been very overstated by many observers. The Russians can accomplish a lot tactically on the battlefield. They can destroy a lot of hospitals. They can kill a lot of civilians. They can't deliver, however, sustainable and enduring stabilization. Mm-hmm. Assad can't do that. The Iranians can't do that either. Furthermore, the U.S. financial pressure on the Assad regime and its backers is starting to have an effect, amplified in part by the collapse of the economy in Lebanon, which is having an effect in Syria. And more U.S. sanctions are on the horizon now that the Caesar bill was passed in the United mm-hmm. States. So unfortunately, the regime is going to be even less able to provide basic services for its population, and therefore increasingly unable to even provide limited stability in areas that they've recaptured, much less recapture the country. The final driver is the jihadist groups, which actually are not defeated. ISIS is badly damaged, but is recovering fastest in areas ostensibly under the Syrian regime's control. ISIS is targeting oil and gas infrastructure in order to deliver additional blows to the Syrian economy. And we still have al-Qaeda-affiliated and other jihadist groups operating in the northwest, which will continue to degrade, again, any sort of hope for the return to stability in the near term.
And you just presented us with a very interesting conclusion that the Russians are here, but that they're not that involved in what's happening. And everybody was saying, well, the Americans are pulling out and the Russians are running in. It's fake news?
Well, the Russians are very good at creating a very big image from a very little actual concrete reality.
Right.
It's disinformation. They're
yeah.
involved, certainly. They are a player. But they actually overreach and under-accomplish a number of times in Syria. And I think that that doesn't get mentioned enough in the West. But the Russians actually realize the limits of their effectiveness in Syria. And you now have senior Russian military commanders talking about lessons that they've learned mm-hmm. in Syria. And one of their lessons learned, we have an analyst that's going to publish a report on this soon. One of the lessons that they've learned is that battle for Aleppo, that was a huge victory for the Russians and Assad, yeah. they never want to do that again because it was too costly. They refer to Aleppo as the Syrian Stalingrad. They concluded from that campaign that they don't have the resources and they don't want to fight that kind of battle, even though it was effective. They can't continue to do yeah. that. So it's an example of the limits.
So let's stay with the Americans then. And in Syria, we see the U.S. is pulling out, right? But in Iran, it's trying to put a lot of pressure on the regime. Can you say from what you are seeing in the past few months that this pressure is working?
I do think the American financial pressure on the Iranian regime is having an effect. In part, the Iranian escalations that we're seeing in response to that financial pressure demonstrate how serious this is for the regime, mm-hmm. how significant of an impact those sanctions are having. Unfortunately, though, I don't yet see a thorough American strategy for how to manage that escalation. Thus far, we have, in my view, reestablished some credibility of deterrence by finally responding to Iranian provocations. However, what the U.S. financial pressure against Iran and in Syria is doing is creating more of a vacuum. And we don't have a strategy, actually, to take advantage of any Iranian pullback from the region or to disrupt Iran's campaign to escalate against us in places like Iraq and possibly Syria moving forward in response to the financial pressure. I think, unfortunately, the Trump administration is still very wary about being too involved in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to do this somewhat on the cheap and, unfortunately, therefore, continuing to provide opportunities for Iran.
The American people are tired of wars. We know that, right? And the American president, Mr. Trump, knows that very well. He's playing on this chord all the time, saying, I'm done with that. I'm tired of that. Let's pull out. Let's go. No boots on the ground and so on. But we have the Americans still in the Middle East.
Right.
Can you imagine a Middle East without American presence?
Sure, it's not a good one. The U.S. does a lot of good in this region. We have made mistakes, certainly. Most democracies do make mistakes. That's kind of inherent in the system. Mm-hmm. I don't think the U.S. will be leaving the region anytime soon, though. I recognize there is a desire by many Americans to do less abroad. I think that's understandable.
Yeah.
We've spent a lot of blood and treasure.
It's pricey.
And there's a desire, though, to hold accountable America's elected leaders for good strategies, yeah. Right? Why are we still in Afghanistan? Well, we haven't won. Okay, well, why haven't we won? I think those are important questions that we need to ask. I think it's a valid debate. I do not think, though, that it will lead to a reduction in the U.S. involvement in this region at the sort of strategic level, because the alternatives to us being involved have typically been worse, more dangerous for Israel, more dangerous for our other partners in the region. We're not willing to tolerate a return of ISIS, for example, and yet that's exactly the kinds of reality that will happen if the U.S. does, in fact, retreat.
Where is ISIS, by the way? Disappeared totally after Baghdadi was killed?
So ISIS has been playing a long game. They've been regrouping quietly in areas that are largely ungoverned or unchallenged. So parts of the disputed internal boundaries in Iraq, which are contested by the Iraqi government, of course, in Kurdistan, mm-hmm. You have ISIS basically owning the night and collecting taxes and imposing punishments in some cases against civilians that disobey them.
Even to this day.
Even to this day. And it's not getting nearly the attention that, in my view, it deserves. Now, does that mean they're going to take a city tomorrow? No. But could they? Could they muster a major military offensive right now? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's a strategic choice that they haven't. And what that tells me is they think that the trends are sufficiently in their favor, that it's not in their interest right now to launch a campaign, but we should be very concerned when they do.
So if I would ask you to point your finger and say, what is the imminent danger to the region for the next 2-5 years, who would you point at?
So I would say, perhaps controversially, the overall conditions of state collapse across the region, which I think are going to get worse. We have a new revolution in Iraq, which many people aren't calling a revolution, but the protesters certainly are saying that they're trying to lead a revolution. We have a similar rising instability in Lebanon, and of course the continuation of the Syrian conflict. I think that is the greatest threat to the region's prosperity and stability overall.
So these two states will dismantle as we know them?
I don't know. We'll see. But they're both certainly headed into a more unstable and potentially violent future. In the case of Iraq, for example, I think there's a very real possibility that this largely Shia but non-sectarian uprising against the government in Baghdad does lead to civil war.
So when you have instability, then the chances for war are rising, of
yes.
course. Do you see the next generation wars in front of your eyes? Can you define them? More soldiers getting killed on the front, or more planes, or more what? How are you going to fight the next war?
It's a great question, because the U.S. national defense strategy, in my view, makes some mistakes in terms of expecting what the next war is by overlooking some of the consequences of what's happening right now in the Middle East. The U.S. wants to pivot to great power competition and the potential for a future war with Russia and China as if those wars would be largely conventional. And in fact, I mentioned the Russians are learning military lessons from Syria.
Yeah.
They are very committed to continuing to innovate and to sharpen tools that are asymmetric, that are not about fighting conventionally, because they'll lose that war. They know it. That's not the war that they're going to try to fight. They're using the battlefield in Syria to test new doctrine, to develop new capabilities. The U.S. should be doing the same. And instead, we're trying to get out of the Middle East. We're trying to get out of Afghanistan. And therefore, I think we're actually less positioned both to accomplish our interests in the region, but also potentially less advantaged in the case of a future conflict with either Russia or China.
So you're saying the U.S. is trying to pull out, but the Middle East is
pulling
chasing the U.S.
Yes, indeed.
Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you.